Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Tonight we will be talking about Vladimir Putin, who has explained today's reasons, his reasoning, and the historical context in which he feels obligated to defend a bunch of people in the southeast of Ukraine, the people of the Luhansk Republic, and another republic that I forget the name, the DPR and LPR. So these two separatist regions of Ukraine, today Putin has ordered his army to get into there for a peacekeeping mission. Essentially Donetsk, yeah, that is the name, Donetsk. a peacekeeping mission in which essentially you will station armies there. And if Ukraine stops the bombardment of this region, then perhaps he will not move further. If Ukraine does continue the bombardment of these regions, Vladimir Putin says you will bear the moral responsibility for the coming bloodshed. So those are clear words of war. Putin is saying, stop annoying these regions. I recognize them as independent from Ukraine and leave people alone. It's a very interesting approach. It's much more subtle than what the US has been propagandizing us with through the mainstream media. You know, they were talking about a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. It looks like Vladimir Putin's strategy is to take this little piece, to protect it from Ukrainian aggression, and to keep the option of a full-scale invasion of Ukraine if things don't go well. I find this a pretty respectable approach, and today I will be just going through the history of what led to this. It's ultimately tied to the political transformations of Ukraine since 2004, and then important events happening in 2010, 2014. Leading essentially Ukraine is torn apart between a pro-European tendency and a pro-Russian tendency. And the wiring that's happening inside Ukraine as it relates to these people taking power over the others and alternatively losing power then, this is what causes the tension that we observe. And so ultimately it is truly the case of a country torn apart at the level of its own citizens because of adherences and allegiance to a European view of the world versus a Russian view of the world. So we will be talking about all this. Someone was saying, Sigilam Sengis on the regular chat was saying, retweet me, bro. Okay, wait a minute. Let me get my iPhone so I can retweet you. Here, your truth is my truth, Sigilam. I'm retruthing you. We are now sharing the same truth. Indeed, today, of course, I will not be speaking about much other news than Russia-Ukraine, but there was the release of Truth Social only on iPhone. I find this absolutely ridiculous in a way. How you would go for that platform as your first out. Of course, I think that what happened is that the Truth Social people were pressured by Trump to be making some kind of release on President Day, because it's President Day, a day of celebration of presidents. And so I think that they had to force something out, but the rest was not ready. And so we don't have a desktop interface, we don't have a browser interface, we don't even have an Android app at this point. So, and even just the App Store version of it is fully bugged, and they have queues and people are trying to sign up and they're getting put in the queue. It's not working. So a big flop for the Truth Social opening. Hopefully they can do better. I mean, this is basic server management, protection from hackers. Of course, you have to think of all this before. It's unbelievable, such lack of professionalism. Earlier today, it was awaited that Putin would make his decision today whether to recognize the separatist republic And he did. Putin recognizes breakaway territories in eastern Ukraine, marking a sharp escalation in crisis. Let me tell you, I'm looking at this and America is trying to present this as it's an invasion on the territorial sovereignty of Ukraine. It's a breach of the Minsk agreements. But I look at the situation and I must conclude that by siding with America on this one, you would be for the continued shelling and bombardment and the lack of autonomy that is given to the DPR and LPR. These regions are filled with people who since 2014-15 have been undergoing constant bombardment, constant war, and the promises that were made to these people have been broken. So I can't believe that we see today on CNN the whole conception that, oh, Vladimir Putin is going into DPR, LPR. He is breaching the Minsk agreement. The Minsk agreements have been breached on a continuous basis for now 7 years. So it's not the particular move of Putin today that breaches those agreements. Those agreements were saying that eventually Ukraine, and they were saying that Ukraine by the day 2015 would have offered constitutional reform such that the DPR and LPR's sovereignty and independence would be respected. They were promising constitutional amendments that would give these regions, recognize their specificity, their difference, and their autonomy. This never happened. And so you have a continuation of the conflict since then. Now, the only one who seems to be talking about peace in this whole thing and who seems to be taking the means for peace to occur is Vladimir Putin. What he's doing a peacekeeping mission in these two sections of Ukraine, I guess you could call them provinces, I don't know how they call them there, seems to be the only way to de-escalate the conflict. Because there's been constant shelling on the two sides of this conflict since 2015. And why did this conflict arise in 2015? This is what we will see today. I have to say, I watched the whole Putin speech today. And it was very historical. It was going back to the USSR, the various revolutions, and how he estimates that there were errors made in the concessions that were given as the Soviet Empire was getting dismantled. But he was saying, you know, this doesn't matter. This is the past, and I'm not here to make reproaches on specific people for the past, but it was an error for Russia to be abandoning and to be essentially pushing these regions of Ukraine into what he calls an amorphous state, Ukraine, a state that is untenable in its current state because it is at the confluence of a northwestern tendency that is very pro-European and a southeastern tendency that is very pro-Russian. And that by putting these people together, a kind of unnatural country was created. And Vladimir Putin was pointing out that this doesn't make sense. This is why we're here. This is why we're in the current conflict. By the way, join me on Entropy if you would like to share super chats. There is already Jonathan Pellerin who has sent a super chat. Thank you so much. Entropy is my favorite platform for questions and super chats. The link is right in the description below. And you can answer the survey tonight. Do you agree with the reasoning I lay out? So do you agree with my stance today? Where I have gained a lot of respect for Vladimir Putin for doing what he feels is the right thing here. Jonathan Pellerin sends a super chat. He says, so France could send its army to Quebec, say it recognizes its independence, and tell Canada, if you send your army, you are responsible for the bloodshed. Well, I for one, would welcome our French liberators, okay? So, I guess, yes. But most importantly, you have to acknowledge that this is not just what's happening. There's much more than this. First, there are the promises made to the DPR and LPR across the years that didn't get respected. They had promised a constitutional rearrangement for more autonomy for these regions. Didn't happen. They have continued the attack on the Russian language. That's another point by Putin. Ukraine has continued to attack the Russian language as to replace it with the Ukrainian language. This has continued. So not the autonomy promised, not the respect of the Russian tradition in Ukraine. And on top of it, constant aggression, shelling, killing of the local politicians that has been happening continuously since 2015. Ultimately, the conflict generating a total of 14,000 deaths since 2015. Now, this is clearly not the situation with Quebec. So this comparison lacks reality. It's not a good comparison. That being said, even in your comparison, even in the case you lay out, I would celebrate France coming to help sovereignty, at least back when I was a sovereignist. At this point, I don't know that I respect Quebec enough to be a sovereignist, but at least that would be my thinking when I was a sovereignist. So when you have 14,000 dead and all of the local politicians that have participated to establishing DPR and LPR as they stand today, and that made their own effort to respect the Minsk agreement. The Minsk agreement was saying you're going to have local elections. There's going to be a law in Ukraine under which you can have your local leaders, and there's going to be constitutional reforms. Now, they have been running their elections locally to establish a kind of autonomous entity, but their elections are being boycotted and they're being attacked as illegitimate by Western powers. So what do you want them to do? I mean, they're trying to stick to the Minsk agreement, and the Western powers are like, no, we don't accept the result of your election, and no, you're not going to get your constitutional amendment. Then if you are for status quo, you are for the continued bombardment in this region for the next 20 years. So is that the side you want to take? I would hesitate. I would not want to be on that side. A solution to this situation requires what Putin did today, which is to recognize that the Minsk agreement will never be respected by Ukraine. And therefore, this is a region of constant war until Ukraine has successfully crushed the separatists who have obtained concessions by Ukraine. They have obtained these concessions on paper, but they have never been effected in real life. So Putin is saying it's time to protect these people for humanitarian concerns. Putin moves, so those are the updates at CNN. U.S. representative on Putin ordering troops into Ukraine. This is not a peacekeeping operation. Well, Putin has said, Don't attack these places anymore. Stop the fire. And it could be a peacekeeping mission. Continue the fire and there will be bloodshed. This is not a peacekeeping operation, and we need to stop enabling Putin with even the use of that word. These are units of the Russian military who are using the pretext of the independence of Russian-occupied sovereign territory of Ukraine to further that occupation and to expand it. They're trying to spin it against the words that Putin chose to use, but I'm not convinced. As long as you don't have a solution for the autonomy of these regions, you are for the continued shelling. So I think that the only path to peace is greater powers starting to have skin in the game in reducing violence in this region. Lendalt Guntram says, Russian-occupied Russian lands, lol. Putin moves in eastern Ukraine, opening salvo to possible large-scale invasion, U.S. and Western officials say. U.S. officials say Biden-Putin summit is unlikely. Germany, France, and U.S. agree recognition of separatist areas will not go unanswered. So they're already in war mode. We're going to punish Putin for this invasion. But Putin has taken a very decent position here. He's not invading against the will of anyone. He's going to help, and he's going to have a friendly relationship with a local regime that has been betrayed by their country, that has been promised things that have never happened. So it's hard for me to adhere to this Western discourse that, oh, we need to sanction now. Sanction for what? Sanction for Putin to be putting his own soldiers at risk in the line of fire, to stop that line of fire. It looks like we have only one peacekeeping mission going on, and it's run by Russia here. Ukraine requests UN Security Council meeting. Ukrainian foreign minister says, we will take appropriate steps. That probably means sanctions. U.S. officials says Russia is preparing for invasion, but diplomacy will be pursued until the tanks roll. So that's the current situation. Go Away says, Jeff, why didn't Putin invade during the Trump presidency? I thought Trump was his homie. Well, it's a good question why it didn't happen. In fact, Putin has expressed today in his speech regrets. And he said this should have been done before. So I guess Putin is telling you, you're absolutely right. He should have done it during the Trump presidency. Clearly, if he had done it during the Trump presidency, he would have been faced with a much less hawkish United States. He would have been faced with a United States directed by a president who had promised not to make land war, land invasion, to his people in his electoral campaign. So there would have been advantages to do it during the Trump presidency. But at the same time, perhaps the timing was not mature. Perhaps there were other considerations. I don't know what led him to wait so long for this. But himself, he recognizes that he's waited too long. So that's a point for your perspective. So what are the areas we're talking about? Donetsk, this region right here, a very small part of Ukraine in the east, and Luhansk, the LPR right here. So the series of events that explains the breaking away from these two parts of Ukraine date back to 2004 and the series of events that led to the conversion of power from a more Russian traditional oligarchic power that was kind of inherited from the times of the Soviet rule into a more aggressively pro-European, pro-American, to a certain extent, power. So let's rewind to the Orange Revolution, of 2004. So the Orange Revolution was a series of protests in relation to an election. This election was putting two people one against the other, although there were other candidates. They were eventually eliminated in preliminary rounds. Yushchenko versus Yanukovych. And Yushchenko was representing the Orange Revolution, the pro-European tendency of Ukraine. And Yanukovych was representing a more traditionalist. He was backed by the powers that were present before him in Ukraine. He was representing a continuity of traditional power in Ukraine. Yanukovych won the election. However, he won during heavy protest, and the protest got so heavy over the capital, Kiev, that he had to accept that the Supreme Court got nervous there and found that the election was illegitimate that there had been too much intimidation and that therefore they canceled the Yanukovych election. Yanukovych, faced with this finding by the Supreme Court, decided to respect it and engage in a second election because he said, if I wanted to keep power, I may have been able to, but I didn't want to see a bloodbath. I didn't want to see a civil war, essentially, to maintain myself in power. So he goes for the option of respecting the Supreme Court, and he loses the second election. So in the second election, he loses 52% versus 45%. So is it because there truly was breach of the electoral process? Is it because the threats effectively had led to his victory? Or is it that people got tired and got excited about the pro-European nature of the Orange Revolution? I don't know. I don't know if there were serious harms to the electoral process. And in fact, this was not the end for Yanukovych, because despite pro-European powers in the Orange Revolution taking power in 2004 under this redo of the election under Yushchenko, eventually Yanukovych would come back to power and win a fair election in 2010. So you have here a period of 6 years where Yanukovych was, and by the way, Yanukovych comes from the area that is today called the DPR, Donetsk. He is native of that region, and he is a Russian, traditional Russian, he has a traditional Russian identity. So he lost in 2004 on the second retry, on the retry, and he comes back to power in 2010. And succeeds at gaining power. He leads Ukraine between 2010 and 2014, and he was not that much close to the European developments in Ukraine. In fact, he, during these 4 years, he negotiates for different free trade agreements with Europe. However, these trade agreements never end up getting signed. And so the reality of Ukraine then, between 2010 and 2014, is that you have the European Union strongly pressuring for free trade, for an opening of Ukraine to the kind of capitalist Western lifestyle. But at the same time, the majority of commerce, of international commerce of Ukraine, is mostly with Russia. So Russia is still a bigger component than European trade. There is also in the negotiations, Yanukovych is demanding that Europe pays something like $20 billion in terms of compensation to join the free trade agreements. And Europe refuses and only gives $600 million or something like this. So he gets much less from the negotiation that he hoped to gather. And simultaneously, In his negotiation between the European Union and Vladimir Putin, Russia seems to be offering more. First, Russia has already more trade routes with Ukraine, has a bigger share of the Ukraine exports and imports. Second, Russia is willing to put on the table billions of dollars, unlike Europe. And third, Russia is not threatening the sovereignty of Ukraine, and on the other hand, Europe is demanding that massive changes in regulations and laws be made in Ukraine for joining the European free trade agreements. So Yanukovych finds himself in front of two deals, and the Russian one is more interesting to him. So he finds himself never signing the free trade agreement with Europe. There are a bunch of people in Ukraine, the people who will eventually be part of the Revolution of Dignity. In 2014, they get pissed off. In fact, in 2013 and 14, they get pissed off at the idea that Yanukovych is siding with Russia. But Yanukovych is the elected legitimate leader of Ukraine then. He can do whatever he wants. And, you know, objectively, you have to look at it. And yeah, clearly the European case for free trade is one where you commit your country to essentially have its laws dictated by the outside, because there was so much demands on changing the regulations inside Ukraine. On the other hand, the Russian offer was bigger and came with no obligations. So it was very tempting for Yanukovych to stay within the Russian trade routes rather than submit to the European Western ones. But somehow, despite this, you know, this being a legitimate questioning and a legitimate political decision to make for him, still, Yanukovych is the victim of a revolution. There are riots. These riots are obstructing government functioning. There are some replies by the government that are violent, but there is also violence in the riots. It comes to the point where Ukraine is under a revolution, the revolution of dignity, and Yanukovych has to flee Ukraine and could never come back after. Essentially, the country has been taken over by pro-European thugs. They have reverted a legitimate government, and they have taken power by force and by riots. There were a lot of violence on the two sides, on the side of the government trying to repress them, but eventually failing. And this revolution of dignity leads to Ukraine definitely outing Yanukovych, but most importantly, replacing him with a government that will pursue an absolutely anti-Russian purge of the government offices. I mean, to the point where 1 million people are banned from government functions in Ukraine since 2015-14. And that's because they have been deemed too pro-Yanukovych. So this includes the firing of Supreme Court justices because it was deemed that some of their decisions in the Supreme Court related to a constitutional amendment that was deemed to be anti-constitutional. Anyways, they were punished. They were fired. They were removed from the Supreme Court. And it includes up to 1 million different individuals of all kind, police chiefs, bureaucrats of all kind, government officials of all kind, all permanently banned from governmental function. This is where the revolutionary power that took over Ukraine in 2014, they made a clean slate. And this opened up Ukraine to be the modern Ukraine, the kind of vassal puppet government that it is. In fact, you could argue, you know, the whole Hunter Biden stuff and the whole interference with local prosecutors and the whole "we can tell you not to prosecute us for corruption." This whole thing was made possible by a total takeover of governmental functions that happened as part of the ousting of Yanukovych and what followed, the revolution of dignity. Go Away says, "I've had a revolution of dignity in my personal life recently." Already? That sounds like it's a different thing. Traditional ethnic Russians who are looking at the situation in Ukraine, in the face of their total ousting of governmental powers that they had acquired legitimately in an election that was deemed fair, they are legitimately looking at this and seeing an overtake of their government by a hostile entity. And I know that parallels like this may be contested from all sides, but I would suggest it's a little bit like if a bunch of SJWs were taking over governments and making it so that white people can't have political office positions in the West. you can totally see this happening in the West. I mean, they're getting to it very quick. It's a little bit what happened in Ukraine, except that the SJWs weren't pushing for other minorities. They were pushing for ethnic Ukrainians against ethnic Russians. So that's what happened in Ukraine in 2014. So in 2014, in reaction to this, you know, they had their essentially pro-Russian president that was pro-ethnic Russian, that was coming from this region. In reaction to this coup, I don't know how else I'm supposed to represent it. It's a coup. It's a coup of, I mean, at worst, you could say it was foreign agents fomenting local insurrections, but at best, it was local insurrection. But it was definitely an insurrection because it led to the ousting of the president and the replacement of his entire team and anyone who's ever been loyal to him. So in reaction to this takeover of Ukraine, there are a bunch, and mostly what happens is in the southeastern of Ukraine, then there is the DPR region, the LPR region, and Crimea that start having a desire for sovereignty because they saw their own country be taken away from their hands. So since 2014, that's what's happening. There's a bunch of people who say, I want none of this. I've seen my country be taken over by a hostile force. I want out. And their wanting out takes the form of an appeal. Some people in these regions are true sovereignists. They would want these regions to be independent. But the vast majority know that this is unviable and they would actually just want their area to join Russia. So, and unlike what you will see in the mainstream media of the Western media, they will tell you that, those are Russian-backed areas. The fact is that these areas have been having a desire for sovereignty that is even greater than what Vladimir Putin would find comfortable. Because at many times since those events of 2014, the local separatists have taken over government buildings, taken over city halls and that kind of stuff. And they've been wanting to run referendums for joining Russia. And even Vladimir Putin himself slowed them down and said at times, you know, let's wait, let's see. Let's see if we can get a good election going, a good referendum that we would trust, but let's not do it right now. So somehow the separatists of these regions are more eager than even Vladimir Putin would be to welcome these parts into Russia. Now, it doesn't change anything for today, because today Vladimir Putin decided that these regions were to be deemed independent, but they've been asking for this to happen for 7 years now. So what happens for these last 7 years is where there's been conflict, there's been lots of murders. The local activists who take over DPR, LPR, many of them get killed, murdered by presumably Ukrainian secret service agents. Although Ukraine says, we have nothing to do with this. I mean, they keep getting assassinated by bombs, various attacks of all kind. And as I said, a total count of 14,000 deaths in the exchange of fire between the two regions. So people of these regions are exhausted. And very early in these conflicts, the Minsk Agreement appeared. The Minsk Agreement, which takes two forms. There was the Minsk Initial Protocol, and then there is Minsk II. So those are the conditions for the Minsk Agreement. And when they saw that the first wasn't working and that the ceasefire wasn't being respected on the two sides, they tried to do it again under Minsk II, and even Minsk II didn't work. Let's have a look at these at these points here. One, to ensure an immediate bilateral ceasefire. And keep in mind that this is signed by a Swiss diplomat and OSCE representative. So that's a commission for the peacekeeping or and monitoring. The former president of Ukraine and Ukrainian representative, Russian ambassador, and the heads of the rebel groups. So one, to ensure an immediate bilateral ceasefire, to ensure the monitoring and verification of the ceasefire by the OSCE, decentralization of power, including through the adoption of the Ukrainian law called on temporary order of local self-governance in particular districts of Donetsk and Luhansk Oblast. So that's one point that wasn't respected. And in Minsk, too, it takes the form of a requested constitutional amendment. And it also takes the form that there will be elections being held for the local leadership of these areas. And it never happens. Or the elections did happen, but they get denied by the Western powers. So you have a problem here where, okay, they were able to have a ceasefire for a given time, but then the other points are not advancing. Take measures to improve the humanitarian situation, continue the inclusive national dialogue, etc. Basically, all that the Minsk agreements have been accomplishing is to temporarily lead to ceasefires. But because the concessions made were never respected, you find yourself in ongoing conflict. And it's my impression that the Ukraine government is just trying to crush these separatist regions rather than let them self-determine. And when they organize their elections, as the Minsk agreements specify, they say, no, your elections are not valid. So what are they supposed to do? Well, today they are celebrating in the streets because Vladimir Putin has said, I will recognize your sovereignty. And he has decided to send what he calls a peacekeeping mission. It appears that boots are about to hit the ground. According to various media outlets, Putin has ordered the Russian military to secure the peace in the eastern Ukraine breakaway regions of Donetsk and Lugansk. The Russian president officially signed the decree recognizing the independence of two breakaway regions earlier on Monday. He has instructed the Russian Defense Ministry to send peacekeepers into the Donbass while telling the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to establish diplomatic relations with both Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republic. Okay, Sunfield Glade says, remember, folks, be like JF, not donating to the truckers. Donating to or supporting JFG could get you put on a list by the state or having your funds frozen. Be safe out there. Well, that's a funny joke, but I'll ban you because you are threatening the viability of my business. And it is not true that the people giving to this channel are being scanned or known in any form, and I do not keep records, and so fuck you. I'm banning you forever, because if I let some revolution like this stem in the regular chat against Super Chat, my whole business crumbles. I don't have a way to make a living anymore. So fuck you, Sunfield Glade. Although, you know, you were a decent member of the show. I think I've seen your nickname before. I don't know if it's you, or maybe it's just a nickname that resembles. I'm very sad to see you go. What else is on the news? Yeah, so one other point that Putin has brought today in his speech is that the problem ultimately from a geopolitics perspective, and because I've focused on the DPR and LPR regions, But there's a big problem from a geopolitical perspective, and it's simply the expansion of NATO eastward. So Putin was making a list of problems that he takes with the expansion of NATO. NATO has been taking more and more countries, including more and more countries. Putin says that there was a kind of promise made not to expand further east, and they broke that promise. Now there are fact checkers who will tell you, no, there was no promise. It's all about whether this was said in discussions with the president at the time. Doesn't matter. He interprets that it's a threat to his sovereignty and his security, and he highlights an aspect of international law that says one state cannot increase its security over at the expense of the security of another state. And in other words, as NATO progresses further eastward, they install more and more missile launching capabilities, and he says those are not just defensive missiles. These platforms can be used to send missiles directly into Russia. And so he says, as this expansion happens, the security of NATO is increasing, but the security of Russia is decreasing. So they are increasing their security at the expense of ours. And the ultimate fear is that the powers that be that have taken over the Western world, and as we have seen in this small history of Ukraine, that have taken over Ukraine, eventually will come to be compelling Russia, and Russia would lose its sovereignty. Either it would lose its sovereignty by regime replacement, or it would lose its sovereignty by simply the threat of military attack. And the closer NATO is to Russia, the easier it is to threaten its security in that way. So that was one of the principles that Vladimir Putin put forward. Not only the fact of the oppression of the people in these regions in Ukraine, but also the fact of the progressive losing of the security of Russia at the expense of others. Europe, US preparing to impose sanctions on Russia. Now that Putin has officially recognized the separatist regions of Donetsk and Luhansk, sovereign states, warning that from this moment onward, Ukraine must halt all military actions against Donbass, or whatever happens next will be on them and the West. It was only a matter of time before Europe and the West retaliated with progressively escalating sanctions. And the the point of Vladimir Putin to the Russians today was to say this. He said, look, America is committed to a path of keeping Russia from developing. They will find any excuse to put sanctions on us. So he was like, don't worry too much about sanctions that would come as a result of the actions today, because in the end, sanctions will come. I mean, look at this. We're merely running a peacekeeping mission here, and you already have governments discussing sanctions, and they were discussing sanctions even before that happened. So in the end, Vladimir Putin is telling his people, look, guys, we're going to have to go forward into the future for ourselves, because the people out there, they are committed to keeping Russia down. And Vladimir Putin mentioned in his speech that he said that he had never revealed this, but that when he had a discussion with Bill Clinton, it was years ago, and he wanted to, he said, what would you think of Russia joining NATO? And basically, Vladimir Putin didn't reveal what was the response, but basically it was a denial. He got laughed at. Essentially, Russia would never be part of NATO. Russia's desire as to how to manage the world, how to manage the geopolitics of the world, would never be considered. And this is what Vladimir Putin is complaining about today. It's that he has his own solutions for peace in this world, and they're never going to listen to him. John Drake says, I'm kind of surprised that Russia hasn't went all in on BTC with sanctions, central banks, and everything that keeps them checked. Well, maybe they did. You wouldn't know. Maybe they did. And also keep in mind that if you were to do this, you don't want to publicize it because it's going to then be very easy for any government to say, "Oh, we're not sanctioning Russia anymore. We're sanctioning Bitcoin as a whole." And so keep in mind that if you wanted to do this strategy, you wouldn't reveal it. All right. People are complaining about free speech here. You're pretty free to say anything you want. You can even criticize me. But if you attack my business model, if you come here to keep me from feeding my family, I will fucking ban you. Luke Jones says on Entropy, "Hi JF, what do you think of the Novavax vaccine in terms of safety and efficacy against COVID and Omicron?" I've commented on this before. There is not enough data for me to judge in comparison to Pfizer, Moderna. People are excited about this vaccine because, oh, it's not mRNA. Who knows? Maybe it will be as dangerous. If the theory is true that the spike protein is what's dangerous to the human body, then any vaccine will be as bad. Finn Tronat says, "If a testicle transplant were to be done and children were born afterwards, would the children have the genetic makeup of the donator or the receiver of the transplant?" That is a good question. I don't know, but out of my own understanding of the testicle, if you transplant the testicle, you're going to transplant all possible cells that eventually lead to meiosis and the production of sperm. Therefore, you would not be the biological father of the child. Unless there is stem cells being seeded into the testicles, which I think is unlikely, then you wouldn't be the father of the child biologically. So don't carry the testicles of others. Luke Jones says, "Hi Jeff, I recently read the offspring of a tiger and lion will be fertile if the offspring is female, but sterile if the offspring is male. Is this true and why?" You would have to Google it. I don't know. I've heard about the liger. And so, yes, it's these combinations exist, these hybrids exist. And it's possible that there is a difference, say, between, I don't know, they probably don't have a, do they have an XY system? But whatever is their chromosomal system for sex determination, it's possible that the female chromosomal combination is easier to pass on into a fertile being. It's possible that some of the mechanism in the production of sperm versus egg are more difficult to do for the body and therefore cannot sustain the combination. And so it's possible that there is a sex-specific fertility problem in these combos. Carnival says, "Luke Jones, it doesn't matter what vaccine delivery method, the spike protein itself is pathogenic, and so it creates similar adverse reactions. This is why there never was a coronavirus vaccine before." Yeah, it's possible, but it's not necessarily why there never was a coronavirus vaccine before. It's possible. Carnival says, "Also, Jeff, I am disappointed that after all the freedoms you enjoy in the West, you would side with Putin against NATO. You're cheering against your own country, essentially." Fuck the freedoms that are afforded to me in the West, okay? Fuck your interpretation of it. I don't owe anything to the governments that are oppressing me. These governments have constantly punished dissent by controlling bank accounts, by getting people fired through cancel culture, and by letting the private sector control free speech for them. And you've seen it with the trucker, and you've seen also the governments attack the family. So your freedoms don't exist. They exist on paper. Try claiming them just once. You'll see what happens. Freedoms do not exist anymore in the West. And so you say, oh my God, Putin, Putin, Putin. You know what I wish? I hope that some guy like Putin or someone else eventually comes to liberate me from the liberals that have taken over my country. I for one, welcome anyone who will fuck my country up. So be it if it's Putin. Luke Jones says, hi, JF. Do you know if Novavax has lower rates of blood clotting? No, I don't. Again, I do not have Novavax data yet. I don't even know that it exists. What else do we have today on the news? Canada's Minister of Public Safety claims officers showed restraints and professionalism during vicious Ottawa protest crackdowns this weekend. Restraint, and we have pictures of your horses trampling an old lady with a walker. And the arbitrary arrest of people for ideological purposes, the controlling of bank accounts. No, that see, that's why the arguments like Carnival was presenting, they don't touch me at all anymore. I've understood that our regime's specialty is faking liberty. Okay. And because of this, it gets you emotionally attached to the conception that don't you want to protect your liberties? Well, no, I've seen that I have no effective liberty in the world envisioned by the SJWs of this generation. And so liberty, liberty, I will not join the fighting for theoretical liberty that whenever applied are found not to apply. Luke Jones says, hi, Jeff. I have an autoimmune disease, so I'm concerned about both taking the vaccine or catching COVID. Do you have any advice on a cost-benefit analysis when deciding if I should take it or not? It's pretty much a shot in the dark because who knows? Maybe, the data from the mainstream media on this is terrible, and they will tell you that COVID is more dangerous than the vaccine, but they don't have the means to make this conclusion for someone specifically like you. The fact is, I've never seen data that would answer your question. But, consider some stuff. First, the data on the gravity of COVID are absolutely exaggerated by the fact that our data pool is filled with people who are 80 years old. And they're dying from COVID, but you wouldn't necessarily. So, any data that you would have to interpret, keep in mind, take data that is of your age. If you're 40 years old, a lot of the overall population data is completely irrelevant to you because it's filled with too much old people. And so, yeah, I would say it's a shot in the dark. I would personally take, personally, I'm not even giving you that recommendation to you because I don't know of your full situation. But personally, I would do exactly like I did, although I don't suffer from autoimmune disease. I would simply say, look, the vaccine, I'm sure to get it if I decide to get it. COVID, it's not even guaranteed that I will have it. And so I'm going to stay home and not take the vax. That's what I did. I prefer the risk of a natural disease for which my ancestors have evolved and that we've likely encountered before versus the risk of a new technology that my ancestors have never encountered. There will be a debate. People are talking about crypto on the regular chat. Peter Schiff will be debating crypto with no other than Richard Hart. The man of Hex, the man that we've had on the show, this will be a spectacular debate. I don't know when it will happen, but I'll certainly want to watch it. It will be fun to see our own the friend Richard Hart debating crypto with the man who is the most anti-crypto guy on the internet, Peter Schiff, the promoter of gold. Justed says, except when you're out on the road during a blizzard storm stuck behind a snowplow. Hey, JF, what are you talking about? That that I'm not staying home 100% of the time. Well, no, I don't have any issue leaving my home. I leave my home sometimes to do business, to buy stuff, to do groceries. So yes, it's like last news item for tonight. Man gets genetically modified pig heart in the world first transplant. A US man has become the first person in the world to get a heart transplant from a genetically modified pig. The experimental procedure took 7 hours. The pig heart has been modified genetically so that it wouldn't carry the genes that are typically leading to organ rejection in humans. So it's a pig heart disguised as a heart that will stay inside of you and your immune system won't detect it. I'm not totally against it. I don't like the development of genetic modification because eventually it's going to lead us to be tempted to modify ourselves. But I actually take no issues with pig transplant. If we can detect, if we can innovate in this direction, and eventually it might become safe. In this case, the guy took a risk, you know, because he was sure to die. But yeah, it may extend life and make life better for people who suffer from heart disease. So I'm not totally against it. Let's see if people agreed with the reasoning I lay out. 3 people have voted yes. 1 person has voted not sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this situation and I must respect that the behavior of Western nation has been imperialistic, both inside and outside. And there has to be a limit to this. I mean, the power of the American regime is extending over the entire planet, threatening the sovereignty of states across this world. And it's always this little game of, oh, we're just going to let you free. And then when you don't take the right decision, oh, there's going to be a little revolution in your country. And they kick out anyone who doesn't side ultimately with the totalitarian worldwide regime that Western powers have been pushing. So I don't like this attitude of Western nations, and I'm glad that someone is standing up to them, that someone is saying we will offer an alternative to this world, an alternative where sovereignty is actually respected. Because, you know, all these talks of Ukraine sovereignty, Ukraine sovereignty, you will hear this in the mainstream media, but you won't hear them say that DPR and LPR have been having votes. And their population have decided to leave the Ukraine. So ultimately, what we're looking at here is a Western-favored regime imperialistically trying to impose its domination on breakaway regions that don't want to be part of it. So if you're really on the side of sovereignty, well, you would at least be committed to respecting the sovereignty of the people in these regions who have decided to leave Ukraine. And what Vladimir Putin has done today is not an invasion, as far as I'm concerned. I see it as coming to the help of a people that no one will help if he doesn't come. No one will come to DPR, LPR if Vladimir Putin doesn't come, and ultimately they would get crushed repeatedly. But by the repeated assault of the Ukrainian government, the undermining of the local politicians in these areas. So, what else could happen for peace than a greater power saying, whoa, 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 let's stop the bombardments here and let's talk? That is it for tonight. Stephen Robinson says, Jeff, this is the link to the crypto debate. You must sign in with an email address. Okay, well, I'll check this. Okay, I'll see if is the debate already it's been done already, because I'm not the kind of guy to sign in stuff for exclusive stuff. I'm certainly not going to pay for this, I can guarantee. I'll see. I'll check that. much love, everyone, and see you all tomorrow. And by the way, I've told Modern Day Debate, if you want me to have a debate about Russia, Ukraine, I'm willing to take the side that I expressed today. and so if someone wants to defend a pro-federalist Ukraine position, I'm willing to have a debate. We'll see if that happens. Johnny Asia says, where is your Monero address? If you'd like to send me support, you can use the addresses in the description below. Just click on more, and you will also see at jfg.world in the support section, you will see more extensive addresses. You can send all sorts of support through Binance Smart Chain, Monero, everything is there. Much love, everyone. And if you want to support the show on a monthly basis, you can also use the Patreon or the Subscribestar. Much love. See you all very soon.